It's a real place. It's not Disneyland. It's home to people. It's important to people.
This is Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast, connecting backcountry enthusiasts like you with the legendary backcountry lodges of British Columbia, Canada. Each episode, we highlight one of BC's unique backcountry lodges through conversation with the lodge owners and operators.
One of the world's finest alpine settings.
Everybody has to have a transceiver, a shovel, and a pole.
Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast. Your host is Brad Harrison, who's worked and adventured in remote settings his entire life. He's the executive director of the Backcountry Lodges of British Columbia Association, former owner-operator of Golden Alpine Holidays, and current owner-operator of Colwest Alpine Adventures. Now, here's Brad Harrison.
Welcome to another episode of the BLBCA's Mountain Escapes. Today, we're pleased to have a chance to chat with Christoph Dietzfeldbinger, owner, operator, guide of the Burney Glacier Chalet, which is located in the Coast Mountains near Smithers, BC. Hey, Christoph, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Brad.
It's nice to have you aboard. Sadly, I haven't had the good fortune to ever visit your operation, the Burney Glacier. How long has your business been operating?
We built the lodge in 2001 and received the first guests in 2002. And I first visited the area where the lodge now is in 1997. But I've guided around here since 1986.
And your location is a little bit off the beaten path, you know, being more in the northern part of British Columbia. What are some benefits and maybe potential challenges that you notice by being out of the mainstream?
I'm not out of the mainstream at all. It's just that everybody else is not where I am. So I don't think we're out of the way at all. You guys are. But, you know, actually, it's not a big deal at all. People may think that Smithers is remote or anything like that. Nothing could be further from the truth. All civilization is here, even broadband internet. We have a library, a swimming pool, a music festival, two breweries, you name it. So we're not lacking anything. And we also have an airport. So getting to Burney is actually, if you fly, is easier than getting to many, many other places in BC. You don't have to rent a vehicle or spend lots of time on the roads. You just land here and away you go.
Does anybody actually drive up?
Oh, yeah, quite a few people do. It varies a great deal. You know, the people from the States or from further away usually fly, but even they, some of them drive. It's a long drive, but it's an easy drive. And the people, say, between Prince Rupert and Prince George and down to Williams Lake, Fort St. John, they tend to drive.
And can you drive, you know, right to the lodge, or do you typically helicopter to the lodge?
Yeah,
or
how does that work? Itself is quite remote. It's 18 kilometers from the nearest road and two mountain ridges. It's quite a remote place. So you can walk there or ski there, but it's a bit of an effort. We usually do air access, a helicopter in the winter, a float plane in the summer.
The scenery at the lodge must be amazing. Can you just kind of describe what I'd see as I arrived at the lodge?
It's a big place. The mountains where we are not absolutely that high, but they have pretty severe relief. It's quite steep. It's still quite heavily glaciated. So you land among fairly significant glaciers, steep terrain, and it feels remote. There is no road or anything, any industrial activity that you can see from there.
What's the actual elevation of the lodge?
The lodge is only 1,000 meters. It's not very high, but we're at the latitude of the southern tip of the Alaska Panhandle. So we're almost 55 degrees. Kitimat, at the head of Douglas Channel, is only 80 kilometers as the crow flies. Of course, two big mountain ranges in between. So we get a lot of snow, and we have some significant glaciation there.
And what would tree line be at your
1400? 1400. It depends on the aspect. On north aspect, it's lower. South aspect, it's higher. But 1400 to 1500 about. And the mountains are up to 2760. So there's quite a bit of alpine.
Is there many lakes around your lodge location?
Yeah, there are. There's a small glacial lake that is, of course, sedimenting in within 10 minutes. And the Upper Bruny Lake, a large lake, 5 kilometers long, is 5 kilometers from the lodge. That's where we land the float plane in the summer. And there's we built a nice trail. And there you walk past the face tree, which is a really cool thing.
Are all your groups guided?
In the winter, yes. The mountains are really big. They get quite a bit of snow. And it's a very dynamic environment. And we have quite a few avalanche cycles that are not that hard to forecast, but you really want to know what you're doing. So in the winter, it's all guided. But in the summer, I rent the lodge to self-guided groups as well.
And so for the winter, with the guided program, what kind of activities would your guests be participating in?
Well, we mostly go backcountry skiing. We do quite a bit of that. We ski every day there. The trips tend to be relatively long. Otherwise, in the winter, we eat and sleep and have a good time. Sometimes we teach a professional avalanche course there once a year, so there's quite a bit of instruction then. Sometimes we do week-long intro to backcountry skiing courses where we instruct people, but otherwise it's skiing and lots of it.
And you don't have ice climbing programs or things like that?
No, we don't. Yeah, there are ice climbs, but they haven't really been touched yet. They look pretty fierce and they are quite avalanche exposed. So I haven't really touched them because it would have to be really good conditions and you'd have to be quite strong. They're waterfall ice 5 for sure.
And the terrain you're accessing, would that be any of the terrain be suitable for snowshoeing or is it just mostly ski touring?
Well, if somebody really hates their life and they want to make it more miserable, then they can snowshoe. It's really, I don't recommend it for simple reasons. You can't sidehill on snowshoes, and much of our terrain is relatively steep. If you can't sidehill, your life gets a lot harder. And even with fat skis, my track isn't really wide enough to accommodate a snowshoer with any degree of comfort. So it's relatively hard to move around on snowshoes. And then you can't ski down. You have to walk down. Who would want to do that?
I'm sure you have split borders. What would be the typical size of a ski touring group at your facility?
We take 10 guests. And yes, we do take split borders. We like to see them on hard boots, but we take them on soft boots. That's fine. But yeah, we take 10 guests, 2 guides, 1 cook. That's the number of guests we take. We like this smaller group experience. We really appreciate that. But we also always have 2 guides because no group is entirely homogeneous. We can split the group whenever we want. And also it's a big remote place and it's a good idea to have 2 professionals there.
Mountains bring peace to the people.
This is Mountain Escapes.
I guess we'll get to the important details of a backcountry lodge now. What kind of food would I expect at your facility?
Well, you would expect, I don't know what you would expect, but you would get very good food. For me, it's one of the perks of working there that I get to eat really good food. As you know, Brad, the lady with whom I ran the place, my friend Monica, died last year, and she was the best cook. She was just wonderful, and I miss her a great deal. But I've always been fortunate to work with very, very good cooks. Yeah, and one appreciates how hard these ladies work. Yeah, they not only cook the food, which is quite a bit of work, they also plan it, they order it, they organize it, they look after it. So I've been very, very fortunate that there are 3 excellent cooks there who share the job.
So unlike many of my backcountry trips, I guess there'd be something more than sausage and noodles.
Indeed. One of those ladies is Italian, and I really like Italian food. So she makes just the most wonderful Italian foods that you can imagine. And the others both have ample experience. Last year, we did a major reno and upgrade to the place. The kitchen is now much bigger, and so is the seating area. So the cooks like that a lot. And we've changed the serving mode. We don't put pots on the table anymore. We have an island and serve buffet style, so everybody can take as much as they please. And the way, you know, the breakfast at 7, you can have your standard North American breakfast, your eggs and bacon, but you can also eat oats and muesli and things like that. And then the cooks put out the lunch makings. Everybody makes their own lunch. There's plenty of hot water for thermoses. And when we come back, we get a snack that other people might call a meal, but it's just a snack, wonderful soup and some appetizers. And then we hit the sauna, which is quite a feature. And then we get serious about dinner.
And so do you spend a lot of time at the lodge yourself?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I try to work 2 weeks on, 1 week off, if I can. It can be a problem when you're the operator and, say, a guide who is scheduled gets injured or sick. And finding guides in the season now is pretty much futile. So there was a year that I worked 7 weeks in a row. That was a bit more than I wanted. And 3 weeks is fine, but I try to work 2 weeks on, 1 week off. And I'm fortunate enough to work with a number of excellent guides, some of whom live here and some of whom come from outside.
So being a mountain guide, which are not all the lodge owners are, do you think that adds complexities or difficulty in your position of running the lodge, or is it a bonus?
I consider it a bonus because I can guide in the summer. And in the winter, I can do some things with the guests that a ski guide might not wish to do. You know, there are some scrambles to summits where I feel pretty comfortable making things safe for guests. That some of the terrain might be at the limit of a ski guide's scope of practice. I consider it a bonus, and I like working with mountain guides, although some of my best guides and friends are ski guides.
This is the BLBCA's Mountain Escapes podcast. Thank you for listening. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you hear us on. Now, back to the podcast.
Christoph, you mentioned we've been discussing your winter operation. How does the summer season differ from the winter? What kind of guests or what kind of activities do your guests engage in?
You know, the summer season has always been a bit of a puzzle for me. The place is really wonderful in the summer. It's really nice alpine climbing, but most of the alpine climbing is reasonably demanding. And for the bigger peaks, you have to camp or bivvy. And not too many people want to do that. I find it hard to find guests who want to climb Hausen Peak or Kitnayakwa Peak. And it doesn't have a name really that's known, even though it's a really nice alpine ascent. We also have a bunch of shorter rock climbs that we bolted not too far from the lodge. We have ice within half an hour's walk from the lodge. So when I do general mountaineering courses in the summer, I'm really happy with the terrain because there's such a variety so close. And there are some summits that can be reached with a bit of glacier walking and maybe some scrambling. But the bigger peaks are a bit more serious undertakings. So that's one thing why there just hasn't been as much activity in the summer. But now people start to have a wedding at the lodge. I think, well, I thought maybe, you know, the captain of a ship is entitled to perform marriage ceremonies on board. I've been wondering if I, as the mountain guide at that remote lodge, can do marriage ceremonies, but probably not.
So you don't have a lot of, you don't have any hiking?
Oh, yes. There's hiking. But you know, there are a few trips that are kind of entirely non-technical, no snow, no ice, walking. And I built quite a few trails to treeline. But that's somewhat more limited. There isn't an awful lot of that. And if you want to do more, you pretty much have to travel on glaciers, even if those are easy. You know, it's basically a walk in the snow and you put a rope on because there might be crevasses. Far fewer people want to do that.
And do you have any fishing or hunting?
There are fish in the lake, but I haven't fished. There are kokanee, mountain whitefish, and cutthroat in the lake, but I haven't tried that. Other people have ice fished there in years past. And hunting, it's again something that I just don't do. The place is in a guide outfitter's territory, but they have never used the northern part where I am. So they have a camp on a different lake, and they sometimes go goat hunting, but I've never seen them.
I'm just, if you thought about it, what do you think your guests, especially the ones that return over multiple years, value most about their experience at Burney Glacier?
Hard to say for me, really difficult to say. I'm just grateful that they do and that they seem to like it so much. I have a lot of return guests, and they tell me that the skiing is really good. They call this skiing exceptionally good there. I'm told that my sauna is the best in the business. The food is also praised, and I seem to not put people off too much in my guiding, so they come back, and I'm just really happy about that.
British Columbia, Canada is a backcountry skier's paradise with epic snowfall, vast alpine terrain, and cozy remote backcountry lodges. Your adventure begins here at backcountrylodgesofbc.com.
Kind of an odd question perhaps, but just in your time operating a backcountry lodge or guiding in general, have you noticed significant changes in the expectations of guests?
Well, I don't know about the expectations, but what I do notice is a generally higher standard of ability. People tend to ski better, and people tend to be in better shape than what I saw first. Yeah, the decline of telemarking probably has something to do with that, and the increase in the quality of the gear in general. I honestly couldn't say, Brad. I just see a higher level of skill and ability.
Given your position, you're really in a prime place to, you know, influence and inform backcountry users. How would you like to positively impact those users?
Well, that's a difficult one. You know, when you live in an area for a long time, you develop a personal relationship to it. And one of the big things for me is if I can show people, if I can help them experience that the mountains and the place is not a scenery, it's not a backdrop, it's really a living thing. And it's been home to people since time immemorial. I'm on Wet'suwet'en territory, and where the lodge is, people have lived there for millennia in the mountains. If I can get that across, that it's a real place, it's not Disneyland, it's home to people, it's important to people, then if I can get that across, that's great. And then if I don't kill people and they have a good time skiing, that's even better.
You're a member of the BLBCA, as we both know. If you had one specific activity you'd like the association to focus on, particularly in support of its members, what would you like that to be?
I think what the association really needs to get into is working with First Nations. Where I am, that's Delgamuukw country. Delgamuukw is the Supreme Court decision in 1997 that asserted Aboriginal title where there's no treaties. It was a landmark decision in Canadian history. And that comes from here. Those were the chiefs from Whitsett and Hazelton that brought that action. In the South, I think there has been a little bit less of an assertive First Nations presence, but here it's been there for a long time. And I asked permission from the chiefs before I built, and I was fortunate enough to develop some relationship with the local First Nations, which is not that easy. We're still a highly segregated society. But I was the adult basic education instructor in Whitsett for a while, and I developed some friendships and relationships that still hold. And so this has always been close to me. But right now, First Nations are asserting their rights a bit more. And we are operating, working on First Nations territory. It's up to us to establish a relationship to them and make sure that we respect their jurisdiction, because that's what it is. So that's, I think, is a big task in front of our membership.
I would agree with you, Christoph. People are interested, how would they best reach out to learn about your operation?
There's a website, bearmountaineering.ca. That has quite a bit of information. There's a Facebook page. Bernie Glacier Chalet. I'm terrible with that kind of thing, but I try to post things not too large intervals. Through the website, there is a way to email. Email works best. I'm not often in the office, and the phone can be a bit of an issue, but email really works best, and I do respond to emails.
This has been the BLBCA's Mountain Escapes. We've been fortunate enough to visit with Christoph Dietzelbinger, owner-operator of Bernie Glacier Chalet. And we thank you for listening in. Take good care.